Hi, I'm Susie Larson. Here's the podcast from Middays with Susie Larson. Enjoy the conversation. It's only just a matter of. Welcome to Middays. I'm Susie Larson. So honored to have you listening today. In fact, I look forward to bringing you conversations every single day that hopefully inspire you in your faith walk, that deepen your understanding of God's word, and that heighten your awareness of God's very real presence in your life. I am so excited about today's show. You know this if you listen often enough, that every single month we have Dr. Troy Sproul on the show to answer your questions about health and the healing process. Well, if you've listened to me over the years, you know I have another doctor friend that I thank the world of, trauma surgeon Dr. Tom Blee. So I've got these two worlds colliding today, traditional medicine and functional medicine, and these two godly men that I just think God is using in such profound ways to bring healing and hope to people who are in desperate places. And I knew they would be fast friends if I introduced them. They're here in studio, but we're going to do something different today. We're not taking calls on health and healing. We're actually going to hear their backstory, some of the stuff, the hard stuff they've walked through that is just deeply impacted how they approach the healing process. And then they're going to tell some of their favorite kind of patient healing stories of just people, heroic people who've recovered from amazing things. If you've got questions, comments, you can text them in or email them in. I will tell you that Dr. Tom Blee has a book that you will read in one sitting. It's so gripping. How to Save a Surgeon, Stories of Impossible Healing. We've got 10 copies to give away, thanks to Dr. Tom Blee. And you can get in the drawing. You know the drill. If you listen off enough, you email middays@myfaithradio.com. Don't forget your mailing address. Excuse me. Either put How to Save a Surgeon or Tom Blee in the subject line so I know this is your book, or you can text 877-933-2484, and don't forget that address as well if you're texting for the drawing. Quick announcement before we hear from these two gentlemen. We've got a live studio event coming up a month from now, Thursday, August 22nd, with Dr. Troy. It's a live studio event right here at the station on our main floor. Seating is limited. We only have 75 seats. It is free. We'll have like a little meet and greet, little appetizer time, and then we're going to go into a room and record an actual show and then have a little bit of dessert after, a little meet and greet afterwards. So as I said, it's free, but you do have to sign up to reserve a ticket. But I'm asking you, don't reserve a ticket if you're not sure that you can come, because I think those 75 tickets will go fast. You can reserve up to 4 seats. And again, please make sure that you're able to attend, because someone's going to want your spot. So that information is up on our website at myfaithradio.com. Let me tell you about my guest. We'll get him on the show. Excuse me. Dr. Troy Sproul is CEO and founder of Synapse Center for Health and Healing, located in Eagan, Minnesota. He loves God and is passionate about health and the healing process. Dr. Tom Blee is a trauma surgeon in St. Paul, Minnesota. He's a creator and co-director of Life Team, a hospital-based intervention program which brings transformational change to those caught in cycles of violence or despair. This is the one time I'll have you talk at the same time. Welcome, gentlemen.
Thank you for having us.
So excited about today's conversation. And both of you know this. I've interviewed you both enough over the years. I'd love to start out by talking scripture. And I'll start with you, Dr. Tom. Is there a verse you've been thinking about these days you can share?
Yep. So I went right to the beginning in my phone. There it is. Genesis chapter 1, verse 2-4. The earth was without form and void, and darkness was over the face of the deep. The Spirit of God was hovering over the face of the waters. And God said, "Let there be light." And there was light. And God saw that the light was good, and God separated the light from the darkness. I think what was interesting was when the invite came to do this show, I think I had just listened to Dr. Troy's last show, and it was about being stuck. And in the world, and I also think it's interesting because you and I do the shows always in May and June, which is an extremely busy time for us. And I was worn out. My team's worn out. My hospital's worn out. And I think for me, the Bible at that point was just flat. So I was sitting down and I just said, I'm going to go to page 1 and try to figure out again where my guidance is. And this verse popped up. Hmm. And what I've really tried to do in the last few weeks, even in the world we work in, is just sometimes my only job is just to bring light. I don't have the answers for the violence, for the drug use, for the exhaustion, for anything. And so I've really been trying to just take any interaction that I have and say, I may only be able to bring light because that's what God said at the beginning. That's good.
Hmm. So good. And for those of you, you'll figure this out as we have a conversation, but one of the reasons this is such a tough season for Dr. Tom Blee and his team and his hospitals, it's gang season. And so the violence that he sees, he's on the front lines. And again, want to just thank you for all that you do in that regard. Pretty amazing.
Thank you.
How about you, Dr. Troy?
I went to the Psalms, so I've got Psalm 62:5, "For God alone, O my soul, wait in silence, for my hope is from him." And it's very, very similar. I think every time when a patient's in a low spot or I'm in a low spot, it's best, and I've found it to be best, to just be still and be with God, and then God directs me, and I don't feel alone. I know that it's not all on my shoulders, because we find out in the healthcare world, I don't want to speak for you, but we found in the healthcare world how hard it is, and if you think you've got it, then you get into trouble. You get humbled very quickly. And so for me, anytime there is a challenge, I do look to God, and he brings me hope, and that's what light is too. That's the hope. The whole, all of Scripture is hope. That's what it is intended for, because God, he knew what we're going to go through, and so he still wants us to do these things for him and for the people. And so for me, being still and being with God brings a lot of clarity, brings peace back, and it brings me back to a foundation that has not been able to be shaken. I get shaken when I leave it.
Very good, very good. Just read in Corinthians, 1 Corinthians, and I don't remember exactly how it went, but something like, those who think they know it all don't know anything at all, but those who love God are those whom God recognizes, you know, and it says knowledge puffs up, but love builds up. And I just think that's so good. Well, let's start with you, Dr. Troy. You've told a little bit of your backstory on past shows, but tell us what we don't know. Just, and again, how some of the low points of your story have even shaped how you show up and how you help people.
Well, I said I wasn't going to do this, but I'm going to start from the beginning when I was a child.
Please do.
I'm actually going to tell my mom's favorite story. This is a story she told everyone, and it was the moment she was the most proud. And it's really reflective of who God made me to be. And I would say in the grand scheme of things, I'm two things. I really, really grew up wanting to help people, and I was really, really competitive. And so those things don't always mesh very well. And so her favorite story, and I won trophies in sports and stuff growing up, but her favorite sport memory was when I was playing soccer in a mixed league. I was very young, 5-6 years of age, and went up to get the ball and stole the ball from a really nice girl. And and she fell, and I had a breakaway, and my mom knew the conflict that was going on in my head.
Oh, bless your heart.
And so I turned around, and I went and helped her up and then went back after the ball. And that's her favorite sports memory.
Yeah.
Do you know how many trophies I won? And that's her favorite sports memory.
That's fantastic.
So I've always had a heart to help people, but you can have the best of intentions, and they fall flat. And I can't tell you how many times I've tried to help people, and it didn't serve them. So there's a difference between supporting and enabling. And so I went through some tough times in my life, trying to do more, be more. And with a heart of service, I would sometimes overextend myself. And in my mid-20s, I got pretty sick. And this is really, there was two defining moments that really shaped my life and how I am to this date. And that was one of them. I got very, very sick and doctored for years trying to figure things out, and was told I'd be in a wheelchair the rest of my life. And at my lowest point, I couldn't move my arms, couldn't lift my arms, couldn't even raise a glass to drink water. And no one really understood what was going on. A lot of the doctors either couldn't find stuff. I went to everything. I went to everyone. A lot of alternative medicine diagnosed me with a lot of things under the sun. And I got bits of information here and there. So long story short, I'm not in a wheelchair, doing pretty well. And the learning that came from that, both the biggest thing was my mindset. My mindset was a big part of the healing with that. And so that started to shape a little bit about my self-limiting beliefs and self-condemnation and what that led to it. And it looked like a very successful person. I was a Division I rugby player, but within a month of rugby season ending, I couldn't lift my arms. So a lot of it, it was just a big learning curve about who I was and how I showed up in this world. And it shaped a lot of how I doctor right now, because there's nothing that'll speed up the learning curve for a doctor faster than being a patient for 2 years.
That's right.
And so that was a big wake-up call, and it served me. I already had a servant's heart, but there was depth there now. There was understanding. And those memories have not left my head. So when I see people suffering, I remember what it was like to be on the other side of that conversation. And then the second part was, I started a successful clinic and was doing really well, had a waiting list, working way too much. And I ended up losing my marriage, and it came out of the blue. It was out of left field. It was not anything that was on my radar. And it was the first time in my life I felt depressed, where I literally didn't want to get up. I didn't want to do anything. And then to treat people when you are in that state was very, very hard. And I remember having the thoughts of people telling me what was going on in their life. And I remember thinking, you don't have problems. I have problems right now.
Let me tell
I'm
you.
I'm suffering over here. Yeah. And I have to stepping up and treating them was one of the most challenging times in my life. But I had just Jesus-loving people come into my life, and they swept me up. They helped me. So they really helped me get back on track. They really helped me. That's where... just be still. There was times where I'd go home at night and it was an empty apartment because I was by myself. I had lost my family, which was my why. I had realized my entire life up to that point, the career was to provide for my family. And the vision I had was gone. And so what I wanted for my life, everything I had kind of worked for was gone. So my world got flipped upside down. So I lost my why. And so I lost my drive. And so I didn't, I had been speaking, I'd been writing, I'd been doing all kinds of things. I stopped for 5 years, didn't do anything. I wouldn't even say yes to going, doing a talk, a presentation, anything. Because I wasn't, all of a sudden, what I knew to be certain was gone. And so it was a very, very trying moment. But people brought me back to God, and I was still for years. And then that shaped everything. I ended up meeting, I'm going to tear up. Susie, she's going to make us cry.
She always does, yeah. Given.
I met my beautiful wife now, and lovely extended family, amazing family. And I love my life. I love my wife. And she loves God, and she teaches me so much on a daily basis. And it shapes, even to this day, my practice now. So I don't really make any big decisions without praying about it, checking in with God. And I even wrestled with him about the whole functional medicine clinic and building what we're building now, because I was really comfortable with a nice small private practice and waiting list, and I was good. And God put it on my heart that I was made to do more.
Amen. Yeah. Dr. Troy, thank you. We need to pause here. When we come back, we're going to hear Dr. Tom Blee's backstory. Then you're going to hear some amazing patient stories. You'll be so inspired. We've got 10 copies of How to Save a Surgeon, Stories of Impossible Healing, thanks to Dr. Tom Blee. You'll hear his stories in this book and then these amazing patient stories, 10 copies. So text or email if you want in on the drawing, 877-933-2484, or email middays at myfaithradio.com. Back in a minute. Welcome to Middays. I'm Susie Larson. So honored to have you listening today. We've got such an important, great show planned for you. Two of my favorite doctors are in studio, Dr. Tom Blee and Dr. Troy Spurl. And we're not taking calls or questions on health today. We are actually hearing stories from these dear doctors. You know, one's in functional medicine, one's in traditional medicine. And God has gotten a hold of their lives in such a profound way that it deeply impacts how they show up and help people heal. So we've just heard Dr. Troy's story. If you just tuned in, you'll have to catch the podcast after the live show. We're about to hear Dr. Tom's story, and then we'll get into some of their patient stories. Dr. Tom, tell us your story, a little bit of your backstory, and really the pivotal points that impact how you operate even today.
Sure, sure. So I was born and raised in Rochester, Minnesota, southern Minnesota. My father was a business owner, so he owned a bar. And so I always say I grew up on a bar stool, and there's people listening that are like, we've heard this all the time, but I did. And I grew up in a world where I learned different interactions and different conflict resolution and so on, and was probably the first biker bar. So that's just where we were. But also grew up in a home of Catholic faith, church every Sunday, and Catholic schools, and in the face of raging alcoholism. My mother was an alcoholic, is recovered now and a wonderful woman, but it forged how the dynamics of the house, which is not too unusual. But as I moved through this and as I got older and especially into high school, I mean, I always knew I wanted to be a doctor. And there's, like you were saying, Troy, there's the heart there to help. But some of my motivation was probably being something that I thought was better than what I was currently in. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to work as hard as my dad wanted to work, but I also wanted a label on me that would probably hide some of the things that we were going through. But moving through that life and trying to turn towards the church and so on, I was in the world of Catholicism where it was very condemning, and I never understood how Jesus as our Savior never came off that cross. Every time I looked at it, there he was. And eventually it just kind of it just went away. Moved through college, moved through medical school, and moved through residency into a marriage. And it's interesting, like you were saying, Troy, there's things in our training, I think, that we're taught. You know, you have to fix this. Nobody else is going to give you the answer. You have to work hard. In our own, we're elevated or almost trained to be elevated to be our own God in a sense, and it's not sustainable. Hmm. And it did get to the point where my marriage fell apart. I learned through years of listening to this show and many other shows why there was a dynamic there that was never going to be successful, but it fell apart so badly that when I was making a plan to leave this marriage, at that point my ex-wife really set me up with the domestic violence. It was the night I was supposed to explain to my son why I was leaving. She staged this event, and I end up in jail, charged with fifth-degree domestic violence, disorderly conduct.
And you're a doctor at this point, respected doctor in your community.
Right. This was just 4 or 5 years ago, ago. And so now I'm really in a world that I had no idea what to do. Now, interestingly enough, that about a year prior to this event, I knew I had to make changes in my life. I knew I was at the end, and I had gotten down on my knees, and this is in my book, through the advice of my sister, who's just an amazing spiritual guide. And after repetitive conversations, she kept saying, "You just need to get to know Jesus." And I'm like, I'm sick of hearing that. But I was at the end of my rope, and I did get down on my knees, and I did say, "I don't think you exist. I don't even know when you've ever showed up." Hmm. And I was a year into my trauma practice. I had shifted from small town community medicine into teaching into this busy world of trauma. I was over my head in that. And I came to him as a trauma surgeon and said, you've got 5 minutes, to show me that you even exist. And when I stood up, I instantly felt different, instantly felt a presence. And like you were saying, God-loving people came into my life. God started to set up, and the relationships that he brought in my life, you can't predict. The first one was John Turnipseed, who's been on this show, who's, the worst gangbanger in the history of Minnesota. He and I shouldn't meet, but he became my next advisor. And so working with him and through him and getting to know him and multiple phone calls, and that was my advisor. And a year later, I'm in jail. And he knows jail. So I had to go.
See, God always goes ahead of us.
right. But I remember I couldn't get an attorney. I couldn't do anything. And the next day when I walked into that courtroom shackled and hadn't showered and had done a mountain bike ride and my son wasn't home and had walked in when the police had shown up. And I don't know if I'd ever been so low.
Wow.
But somehow my sister had... I'd snuck one phone call out before I got into jail, and she Googled that number. It was Goodhue County Jail, and she found me on the list. And then there's my sister, there's John and his assistant Julie, there's my team, my life team, to walk me through this process. And getting to know Christ, and a year later, everything unraveled. It was horrible.
It got worse before it got better.
Oh, gosh, it got nasty.
Yeah.
Because the day after, I had to go back to work. I had to explain what happened. Then I got suspended, precautionary suspension. Then I'm appealing a suspension. I'm trying to keep my medical practice. The hospital was great. The physicians that represented me were great. We were just checking in. They're like, "We know who you are. Let's keep you moving and move me through this process." Divorce paper came soon thereafter. Accusations of child abuse came in.
Oh, my goodness.
All kinds of things through a process that in the divorce process, people know it's awful. You know, it's a legal system. It's not a justice system.
Mm.
So, and to work through all of that, but what happened during that time with good counsel, with my sister, with John, with all kinds of other people, was a promise I made to God. And I said, okay, I know you're there, and here's what I'll do. I'll tell your stories. You got to show them to me, and I'll write them in a book. And that's where this book came.
Mm.
And in the process of paying attention at work, you know, it's like you said, I didn't want to go anywhere. I had to go to work. I couldn't get to my youngest son at that point. But I had these inner city gang kids, and I ended up going to downtown Minneapolis with John and going to fathering classes and parenting classes because I had nothing else to do and to hone my fathering skills and so on. And these kids became my surrogate kids. And out of this whole process came Life Team. You know, in my hospital, we have two teams for end of life in hospice and palliative care, but we need a team for life. And what I didn't know was I can talk about the program because John and I were the first clients. He was in a spot in his life, and we had to rebuild all of this together. So I think that's probably as short as I can go, but I think what's striking, though, is the two of us sitting together and the key words you use in medicine, the blind sides that sometimes we have is how we're taught to do what the expectations are. And even out of this whole process, part of my Life Team mission now is really with my residents. How are we training the next, you know, medical students and residents and stuff, and what are we showing them so that they're not in this position, right?
I wonder what your perspective of, I mean, because you are on the front lines, trauma surgeon, in really in the cities where so much gang activity is happening, I mean, I wonder how you would have viewed some of these patients who've shot each other up. I mean, you've talked stories in the past about having two gang, you know, groups opposite ends of the hallway. I mean, and the tension of it, nurses, you know, telling you, go handle this, you know. But, I mean, you actually spent time in jail that night with a young man that you got to tell him about the Lord. I mean, something was already shifting in your spirit. We're heading up on break here. But I tried to imagine how differently it would be for you, Dr. Tom, had that not happened. Because your compassion for those who the rest of the world discards just oozes out of you. And I hate what happened to you, but I marvel at what God has done with it.
And I think that's what I try to tell people. Just be patient. He'll give you a new toolbox and a new tool set. And Dr. Troy said it, you know, the new practice he has and the gifts he's been given and so on. I couldn't even recognize those before the collapse.
Mm.
And now that I know they're there, the servant's heart is even bigger. But there's still you have to be careful, you know, because it can be too big.
Yeah. So good. Talking to Dr. Tom Blee, Dr. Troy Spurl. It's just, we're talking health and healing stories, and I wanted to hear their backstory first so you understand their context, their perspective. When we come back, buckle up. We've got some great stories from both of them, some of their favorite patient stories. 10 copies. If you enter to win, you just might win. So text or email 877-933-2484 or middays at myfaithradio.com. We'll be back in a moment. Hope you're having a fantastic day. We sure are. In studio, I have Dr. Troy Spurl, Dr. Tom Blee. Tom Blee's a trauma surgeon in the Twin Cities area. Dr. Troy's founder and CEO of Synapse, Center for Health and Healing. I love it when traditional and functional medicine collide because there's an incredible need for both in our lives. Both of these gentlemen have just told their riveting backstories of just pain and hardship, but how it's shaped their practice and how they approach patients. Now we're going to spend the rest of the time talking patient stories. I buckle up because there's some really great stories. Dr. Tom has brought in studio 10 copies of his book, How to Save a Surgeon. This will keep you up. I mean, you will not want to put it down. And if you enter there to register to win, it's a good chance you may. You can text 877-933-2484. And if you've got questions, comments, add those. But don't forget the mailing address or email middays@myfaithradio.com. And at this point, from the rest of the show, we're going to play kind of co-host, the three of us. I'm not going to be the only host. So as Dr. Tom's telling a story, Dr. Troy might want clarification because I know his brain is going to start spinning like crazy and he's going to need to have something answered.
Or I might just sit here in awe.
Wow. You'll hear him eating popcorn. Anyway.
That's what I do when I'm at home listening to yours. I'm like, that's a great answer. That's amazing.
So they just may say ridiculous things like that. But anyway, we're going to go back and forth and hear some of their patient stories. But Dr. Tom, let's start with you. What story would you like to share?
So I think we're going to talk about Brad from my book. We've talked about him before. And the reason I want to bring Brad back into this is one of the blessings of my book and my writer is we've agreed to tell the next story, and Brad is the next story. His book, In It for Life, was just released 4 or 5 months ago. And so Brad was a very typical patient for us. I remember it was 9:02 on a Saturday morning. We were doing checkout rounds. The offcoming surgeon said, oh, they just flew some dude in from North Carolina. He's got from North Dakota, really bad fever. Orthopedic says him in the operating room, they're probably going to call you. And it was 5 minutes later, I got a call from the operating room. I ran upstairs, and here's my orthopedic surgeon messing around with a wound. And he says, I can't tell what this is. Okay. And so in the story, as it goes, I said, that's poop that you're looking at right now. I said, why is that there? He says, I don't know. I'm an orthopedic surgeon. And trying to collect information and read a chart, I'm hearing he had been hit by a train. He had been opened up, eviscerated from his abdomen, complex pelvic fracture. And the first hospital really just pieced him together and did everything they could. They did an amazing job, but it transferred to us, and things that had done were leaking, and a colon injury was leaking into this bad pelvic fracture. So that's how I first met Brad. So the short part of his is he stays with us for 6 months and has 55 operations, and at some point in his stay was told this leg needs to be amputated.
Sir, I'm going to jump back. Yeah. What did you do the day that you got him?
Well, in the operating room, then it's just damage control. So at that point, he's on his side, and I could see there were staples. I could see skin next to skin. I took it down. I reached my hand up, and it popped up in the incision where this pelvic fracture. And I'm like, he has no muscle. He has no abdominal wall. And the doc's like, I've been trying to tell you that, you know. And so then it was trying to just control this contamination. And I just basically fractured through this colon and brought it up through skin near his ribs. And I remember this, and it's one of our ostomy nurses used this. You have to put an appliance on top of a colostomy. There's nothing there. So I sewed this thing all the way around.
Wow.
And they're like, when should we change this? I'm like, I don't think you can. It's sewed. Just leave it alone. So that's where I started with him. And then he bounces around the system into our surgical intensive care, back to trauma, to acute care. He's just flying around the system. So I would see him every now and then. But there was a hard stop with Brad because the orthopedic team came up and said, we need to cut your leg off. It's not functional, the left leg. It's so damaged. You're going to be dragging a stump around. And Brad was through probably 6 weeks of things at this point and facing the fact that his life was in and out of California prisons. He's part of the Mexican mafia gangs. He had lost his wife, his kids. I mean, he had nothing. He had his physical health. He is a big, strong guy who ran prisons. I mean, he was known. And now he's in bed. You know, he'd been hit by a train. Now he's going to lose his leg. And that's when a nurse came in and said to John and I, we're working with a different young man. And the nurse says, oh, my God, you need to go talk to Brad. They're praying over him right now. They're going to cut his leg off. And John, my friend, had lost or has a son who had been shot 17 times and his leg blown off. And John said, oh, I know exactly what he's going through. Maybe I should go talk with him. And had gone in. And so that started the relationship with John. And that shouldn't exist. I mean, as a Latino gang member and then you have an African-American gang member, those two worlds never collide. Oh, boy. So watching the first dynamics of those two interacting, wow. It's like, and Brad initially shut it down. But in life, we just keep coming back, and it's light, and it's hope, and it's everything you said with the Psalm verse. It's sometimes it's all we can bring, and people turn around, and Brad gradually did and was discharged to rehab. Well, then he got an antibiotic reaction, Dress syndrome, shut everything down. Bone marrow was gone, liver shut down, kidney failure. He had looked like he'd been boiled, his skin. I could only touch the palm of his right hand. He was in so much pain. He was completely naked in the bed. They called me at 3:30 in the morning and said, some dude wants to talk to you. And I went down there. I'm like, oh, my Lord. And, heart rate of 160, blood pressure of 60. And I'm like, he's dying. But this was the first time. Here's the new skill set he gave me that we were talking about. I'm like, I don't even know what to do. And like you talked about, Troy, in medicine, you don't know what to do. I said, I'll just pray. And I remember I couldn't hold his hand. I put my thumb on that one patch of skin and just prayed. And he went to sleep. And his blood pressure stabilized, vital signs stabilized. And then he went up to our medical ICU. And then I was gone for a few days. But I remember coming back 7 or 8 days later to visit him. I'm like, how you doing? He's like, awful, but I'm better. But he was to the point where he just said, you guys keep coming and bothering me. And there was some accountability that was happening. And he kept welcoming us in. So we ended up having a Super Bowl party. John brought his son, Devon. I brought my son, Jack. And we had a Super Bowl party for Brad in his room. And we got in trouble. And there's just pizza. There's a story about that because I was feeding him M&Ms and then I plugged his colostomy and the nurse's like, come on, man. And that's where it went. And his story is even more amazing. But the hard part and what we miss in our medicine, you know, I'm an anatomy guy. Okay, that's what I fix. When I listen to your show and stuff, it's like that functional component and that healing part and everything else, we don't do well.
So it's the physiology part.
Right. You're the physiology guy. Then. Yeah. Right. And so for a guy like Brad, it's like oftentimes we're done. You know, the deck is built. Guy needed a haircut. We gave him a haircut. Someone else take care of him. And that's what we're really trying to bridge with life teams. It's like, okay, even though we discharge you, we may have fixed you, but how do we bring you across the finish line? And what do we need to do? And what resources do we need to bring in?
Did he lose his leg?
No.
He didn't lose his leg.
He has not lost his leg.
And he just wrote a book.
He wrote his book. He was back in May, came back to the hospital to speak to everyone. He's walking with one modified knee brace.
Wow.
He's had 6 other abdominal operations to do his final abdominal wall reconstruction. The colostomy's gone.
And, wow.
He says, I'm the healthiest I've ever been in my life.
Oh, my goodness.
He says, I feel the best.
Wow.
He is back with his ex-wife, with his kids, working. He's amazing. He just
You guys are amazing. This life team piece, because you think of, you know, John Turnipseed, this African-American former gang member, getting shunned by Brad initially, but going, you know, I'm going to be this fatherly figure. I'm going to keep coming back. And the walls come down. And you not only helped his body heal, but you did help his soul heal, too. I just think that's profound. The subtitle of Dr. Tom's book is Stories of Impossible Healing. There are multiple stories like this in your book of, like, they should not be alive right now.
Right.
So thank you.
Oh,
fantastic.
You're welcome.
What about you, Dr. Troy? Tell me one of your favorite patient stories.
I'm just sitting in awe right now. So I knew that was going to happen.
And being you're both competitive, I'm like, that ain't nothing.
No.
This patient dropped out of a plane.
Well, I'm going to say if you see me with a scalpel in my clinic, you can leave. You need to run. That's not what I do.
That's exactly right.
And that's why I have such awe and respect for what Tom does. And then it's just, for me, I think one of the stories that come to mind that there's some heart ones and then there's some funny ones. So I'm going to share a real quick, I'll share the heart one first and then we'll go to to one of the funny ones. So this has happened twice in my career where patients have come in and they've been through the gamut and they've said openly as I'm sitting across the desk, if this doesn't work, I will commit suicide. And that's happened twice so far in my career. And for me, there was this gentleman who flew in from North Carolina, and he's just one of these nice guys. And he was just very open and blunt. He had been on multiple opioids for his pain. He had gastric bypass to lose weight, and then there was some complications there. Long story short, he had 8 different surgeries, and the scar tissue was kind of enveloping his digestive tract. And so he couldn't eat without pain, and he was on the opioids and still had 8 of 10 pain. And He was just struggling. So I didn't know if we could help him, but I said we would take a look and see what we found. And whenever we start working with people, we just go to the basics. We're really looking at what's working, what's communicating. Because my thought process at this point is God made us really, really well. I don't want to have to improve upon that. So it's all about restoring that original communication as best we can. When there's complicating factors like scar tissue enveloping your digestive system, that's when creativity can come in there. And the surgeons didn't want to do any more surgery because, and you could probably speak to that more than myself. But what we did was we first wanted to just get his inflammation down. So he stayed at the clinic for a week and we were doing some things. We found a sleep disorder that helped, once you fix that, it helps improve the vagal nerve output that supports the digestive system a little more, meaning a little more tone to the digestive tract. We changed the inflammation from inside as much as we could with some dietary changes. And then we just worked on the physical part of him. But one of the things that we had to focus on was the emotional side of things. And we do the physical emotional work that I created back about 12 years ago now, and that had a large impact on them. So it kind of helped.
These are like clearings.
It's neuromuscular reeducation. So yeah. we have people go through certain feelings and emotions of what's going on in their life, and we identify what's not working. And we use many of our non-Christians don't know their scriptural principles, but the scriptural principles of forgiveness and gratitude. And so that's what we give them for homework after we've identified what's shutting them down. And there is muscle memory. We see that people retain there's physical consequences to stress in life. There's physical consequences to emotional stress. And some people are gifted at really just having it go in one ear and out the other. I mean, we call it the Homer Simpson scenario at the clinic, but there are people wired like that. Then there are people who are very empathetic, and they tend to carry the weight of the world. And we're supposed to give that to God, but they may not know how to do it or may not have done that their entire life. So we look at what's showing up physically. We work on them physically for the emotions. And so he was crying. He had days where he got angry at his father and other stuff that was going on. He went through this emotional roller coaster, and he, on the opioids, he was at a 8 out of 10 pain still. And so we were able to get him down to about a 5 out of 10 pain. And after the second week, we were working with his doctor to get him off the medication, start to bring him down. And he flew back after a couple months. He was good enough where he went back home and was stable, came back when he started going down on the meds. And we had a bit of a breakthrough because growing up, he was told that he was dumb, would not amount to anything, and that's the message that he received as well. So his parents told him that, he took it on, that's what he thought about himself. Then he got this horrific scenario, this horrific pain syndrome, and something changed. We did a thermography on him at the clinic, and we showed him, the one thing I was stuck was with the scar tissue. And so we got him in a better spot emotionally. We got him in a better spot physically with everything around him. We got his labs all in order, and his inflammation was down. But the scar tissue was a problem. So we did a thermography, which we usually do for breast health and for females. But we took a picture of his abdomen, and we showed it to him. And there's this big, bright spot, and it was all inflamed where the scar tissue. And where the scar tissue was, it was cold. Everywhere around there was inflammation. But what he started crying because he could see his pain for the first time. It wasn't made up. And so that changed everything. All of a sudden, we saw a new level of commitment, a new level of belief, and all of a sudden, we saw just a faster response to everything. And eventually, he got off all his opioids, and he still lives with a 1 or 2 pain level, but it's tolerable, and he eats. He goes out to restaurants. Mm. And I see him on Facebook every once in a while. He sends me a picture of him eating with his wife, and he just says, thank you.
Yeah. Amazing. Yeah. Yeah, it's amazing how you can address so many other systems in your body and help those things get support, and then you can zero in on the problem. And usually you can manage the problem when you get all the other factors lined up, you know? We need to pause here for our last break. We needed 2 hours today because I know you have so many more stories. Talking to Dr. Tom Blee, Dr. Troy Sproul, just of patient stories, backstories, and stories of impossible healing and recovery. I want you to hear these because healing is possible for you, and God cares about your journey. And sometimes we get so stuck, we just lose hope. But hope needs to make a comeback. That's why we're doing this show today. More with the two doctors when we return. Hope you're having a really great day. Thanks for tuning in to Middays. I'm Suzy Larson. I'm in studio with two of my friends, Dr. Tom Blee, Dr. Troy Sproul. Normally every month we have Dr. Troy on to answer your health and healing questions, but we thought it'd be a really interesting show, and it sure has been, where we hear these two doctors' backstories of some of their own pain and heartache and how that really has impacted how they help other people heal. First we heard their stories. Now we're hearing patient stories, and this has been so riveting, you guys. We've got just about 8-9 minutes left. Wonder if it can squeeze in a few stories maybe. Dr. Tom, is there another one that you can share with us?
Yeah, I'm wrapping my arms around that statement. I can see your pain. I mean, that's power. That's amazing. Yeah. You talk about, wow, I just about fell off the chair here. Mm-hmm. So what I struggle with in my world often, and I'm writing my next book, and it's Faith, Miracles, and Medicine is what it's going to be called because of the miracles, but it's suicide. Okay. And I remember hearing this on your show years back. One of your guests that said, you know, there's nothing in the Bible that talks about the consequences of suicide. It's not there. It's not. And I took that to work because feeling the pain and trying to help somebody, that pain is so large. And I remember it was an Easter morning wrapping up. Our shifts on Sundays end at 9, and at 7:30, you're usually you're okay. But it was Easter morning, and there was a trauma activation. And I'm not going to say what Easter, it's been many years, but it was a gunshot wound to the head. Mm. And I'm like, really? Easter morning? Mm. And you go down, and it's a disaster. It was a self-inflicted suicide gunshot wound.
Oh, wow.
Right? So the point, you know, how do you make, if God's present, and how do you make anything good out of this? How do you see it? You know, how do you see their pain? And I remember thinking, and John, and talking through this, and even my sister too, saying, you know, our God is big enough that full discussions can happen. A trigger can be pulled, and full discussions can happen with Jesus before the bullet hits the flesh.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think that sometimes pain can be so big, and maybe we don't see it, but He does.
That's right.
And it can be very kind, compassionate, loving, and everything. Sometimes I think God says, you know, I love you so much that we're going to fix this one upstairs. Come on up.
Hmm.
You know, I don't want to give justification for suicide, but what happened with this family was very interesting because often the patient doesn't die in our trauma bay. We have to go through a series of things. But there were three siblings, I won't say what sex, but one was missing who was in jail. And it came to us that if a letter was written, they would bring this child over. And the two there could not stand the third. But through an arrangement, the third came, orange jumpsuit, shackled the whole nine yards. And here the three came over mom and completely reconciled the relationship, cried together, prayed together, and mom passed away. Miracles still happen in that pain and in that healing. Mm. But boy, if we had the ability, if that, you know, let me see your pain.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
I interviewed Kay Warren a couple times, but once it was a year anniversary of her son's suicide. He had mental health and depression issues. And she was walking out of church one day, and somebody had said, Kay, when are you going to come back? I miss the old Kay. Mm-hmm. And she stopped and said, she's not coming back. You know, my son killed himself, and I'm not the same person. And it's like, I just don't think we can fathom the kind of pain that would lead someone to take their own life. And we have to be so careful with our trite isms around that. I mean, for someone to be so convinced that there's just no hope. I also do believe there's a demonic factor, especially with young teens doing this right now. Mm-hmm. I believe the enemy is so behind that, just instilling hopelessness. And that's why hope matters so much. But you're right. In the worst tragedy, God can bring triumph.
Right.
You know? What about you, Dr. Troy?
Well, I've got a few others that I'd like to share, but I'm going to talk a little bit about maybe some one that's funny. I'm gonna mm-hmm. end off with a
yeah,
funny
let's
one.
Do that.
Yeah, a little lighten mood a little bit. Yeah.
Darn surgeons.
So one of my favorite ones is a story of a teenager who came in with headaches, and we looked at everything, and she was at the age we thought hormones might be playing a role, and we tested that, and she did not respond to our normal scenarios. We found a bunch of things physically off, and when we'd correct them, the headaches would get better, but temporarily. And generally speaking, whenever if you see a chiropractor or anyone in the field that does something physically, if you do any type of work with that, you should be able to build off of it. So you should get some level of stability that can be maintained. Now, stress in general will throw it back off, mental, chemical, or physical stress. With her, we weren't seeing that stability. We call it time to fatigue. So we'd adjust her, she'd feel better, and she'd be back to square one within a short period of time. We'd adjust her, she'd feel better, be back to square one, same time period. So that means that's not the answer. So we did some searching, and it was the first time we figured out, I got a little creative with trying to figure out if there's something in the home.
MacGyver, we call him behind the scenes.
So I took an elastic band and a toothpick, not just joking.
You did take a cup of water, if
That's
I remember.
Exactly yes. Right. You know the story. So took a cup of water, had her put it out throughout the house in every room, and we just tested her on that water to see if there's any type of negative reaction.
So if there's something in the air that's attaching to the water, that's
right.
What you
so
wanted.
My theory was I thought there was mold or mold spores in the air that she was breathing in, triggering an inflammatory reaction in the head because of how she was responding. Long story short, there was only one cup that she reacted to, was the one from her bedroom, the room she slept in. So then we had her do the same thing. Instead of leaving the cup of water out for 24 hours, we said just leave it out for an hour, put it on each wall so we can see where there might be mold in a wall. And as it turned out, only one cup showed up. Or she only reacted to one cup. And so her father was in construction, went and...
And he wanted to punch Troy.
He did.
You're saying?
Yes. They're not...
That's the funny part of the story.
Yes. It's a hard tell.
Sorry.
So I think there's something wrong with your house. And so, but it ended up being an inside wall. So he said there's no water pipes, there's no windows or anything. He checked it all. He says there's nothing there. And I said, well... Maybe it's not a good test. I just thought we'd try something because something's not right here. So then it was bugging him. After a week and a half, he went into her room, stood on her bed, and looked up at the popcorn ceiling. And there's a little hole there, and he started scraping at it. And all of a sudden, the whole part of the ceiling kind of collapsed down on the bed, and someone had popcorned over a vent, and there was black mold growing in that vent. And she was breathing that in every night. So he cleaned it up, and the headaches went away.
Wow. And you never got punched.
And I never got
and
punched.
And they all lived happily ever after.
There are other stories of being punched. But
yeah, I've been there.
Actually, that's my funny one that's coming up next.
Yeah, right. That's an amazing, amazing story. So we've got probably a minute. Can you tell the other
Absolutely.
One quick?
Absolutely. So we had a quote board on our clinic wall for years, and it was quotes from patients. You usually get some funny ones from kids and stuff like that. But the quote that was up there the longest was, young gal, 26 years old, migraines again, but debilitating. She'd had a migraine for 30 days straight. Mm. And when we did her assessment, we found that the jaw was off, and there's a muscle called the internal pterygoid. When I went in there, it was like a piano wire. It was just tight. So I said, I can release this and see if it helps your migraine break. And she said, just do it. I'm in so much pain. And she had this black mascara and makeup on and everything, and I was going in there, and she started tearing up. I said, are you okay? She said, no, keep going. But she said, like a dentist, you know, because my fingers in her mouth. Okay. And long story short, it finally released, and you just heard this pop, and the jaw actually went right back into place, and her headache broke. And
wow.
She said, she sat up, just black makeup and everything streaming down her face with the tears. And she said, "Oh my God, Dr. Troy, that was awful. Thank you so much." And so that resonated with all of our patients a lot.
Exactly. And that's not the last time someone has said that. You two are amazing. I pray you'll come back and do this again, because I know you'll have more stories to share and you have more of your backstory to share. Thank you both for what you do.
You're welcome.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
And friends, be praying for these two doctors, because they really are on the front lines trying so hard to help so many people. Remember, we do have 10 copies of Dr. Tom Blee's book. Get in the drawing. The drawing will be open for a little bit longer here, 877-933-2484, or email middays@myfaithradio.com. Hey, and don't forget to sign up for our live event. All that information is on our website, myfaithradio.com, and we will meet you back here next time. Thanks for listening to this Middays with Suzy Larson podcast. These conversations are available because of listener support. You can make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of the show, subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link to spread the good news of the gospel and to grow the impact of Middays with Suzy Larson.